Hi, you're listening to iiPod, the official podcast of the Duke Lemur Center in Durham, North Carolina.
I'm Matt Bortz, curator of fossils at the Duke Lemur Center.
And I'm Megan McGrath, education programs manager at the Duke Lemur Center.
Hi, Megan.
Hi, Matt.
So this is the time of year when the days are short and the nights are long and it's just cozy sweater weather and you don't really want to go outside. How are our lemurs doing? How do the lemurs at the Lemur Center feel about this change in the seasons and what do they do in response?
So this is the time of year where I think a lot of us can identify with a very cool little lemur that we have not really talked about on this podcast yet, called the fat-tailed dwarf lemur.
One of the great names for any creature. And it's a creature that has a superpower that helps it get through the changes in the seasons here and in Madagascar. But first, we need to talk about the name, the fat-tailed dwarf lemur, which is not a band, should be. Really bums me out that it's not.
Yeah, I always say that it sounds like someone gave them a really mean school nickname that just kind of stuck, but it's a very literal name. So the fat-tailed part of their name distinguishes these dwarf lemurs from other species of dwarf lemur. We do want to note there are other species of dwarf lemur, and all of them are the only primates in the world that are obligate hibernators, which is their superpower. They are hibernating not only because they have to, because of seasonal changes in food and other things, but also because it's what they have evolved to do. So their physiology now requires hibernation every single year. But we will be speaking specifically about the fat-tailed dwarf lemurs during this episode, known by their scientific name as Chirogalius medius, which is really fun. The chiro part of that is just really fun to say.
So these animals, dwarf lemurs, as a group, earn their name, honestly. They are small. Like most of the creatures that we've talked about so far on iiPod, things like ringtail lemurs and eyes, these are pretty big lemurs. These are like a armload of lemur. But dwarf lemurs are little guys. They're like palm-sized creatures.
Yeah, they're about the size of like a small squirrel, I would say. And the body plan is pretty similar. When you think of lemurs, like ring-tailed lemurs in particular, their body is pretty high up off the ground. You know, they're pretty spry, and there's often like a cat-like comparison between them. Fat-tailed dwarf lemurs are pretty low to the ground. They don't have very long arms and legs, and their body plan looks a little different than the other lemurs, and they have this long tail, of course, part of their name. And the reason that tail is dubbed the fat tail is because for a portion of the year, they're actually going to store up to 40% of their body weight in specialized fat cells in that tail. So they're dragging around almost half of their body weight in that tail.
It's just like literally behind them in a way that camels are famous for carrying around a bunch of fat, but they put it over their backs in a way that's like, it's a backpack. That makes sense. But the idea of just like dragging around this like body size sausage behind you is a very silly thing to see when they're ready to go into hibernation.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, we also know other animals that kind of build up fat, right? Like what's the animal that we think of immediately when we say the word hibernation?
Bears.
Exactly. We all think of bears. And a lot of people are surprised to learn that we have lemurs that hibernate because Madagascar is pretty close to the tropics, especially the northwestern region where the fat-tailed dwarf lemurs are found. And fun fact that we have learned over the years is that we know a lot about hibernators from the north because a lot of the funding for research is honestly in the north. So we've studied a lot of things that hibernate in cold weather, but it's not exclusively a cold weather thing. There are actually a few tropical species that do hibernate, and dwarf lemurs happen to be one of them.
So if we went to Madagascar, where would we find fat-tailed dwarf lemurs in the wild?
So these specific dwarf lemurs are going to live in the northwestern dry forests of Madagascar. It's actually the same habitat as our friends the cockerel chafak, who we've talked about in a previous season. And if you remember from that season, the northwestern region of Madagascar, those dry forests have a big swing from times of plenty in the wet season where lots of different food is available, lots of fruit especially is available, and then they swing to very little being available in the dry season. And the cockerel chafak have evolved folivory as a way to adapt and find another source of the nutrients they need. The dwarf lemurs have evolved to kind of just opt out of that whole season. So during that dry season, they are going to use all of the fat that they have stored up in their tail over the wet season months, eating lots and lots of food. And especially at the tail end of the wet season, they love to eat sugary things. They love to eat things that are fruity or nectar-like, things that will really help them kind of up their fat content in their body. And then They go into a state of hibernation for sometimes up to 6, maybe even 8 months out of the year, depending on the dwarf lemur species. And in the fat-tailed dwarf lemurs, they are going to find a tree hole, typically, that they can go in and hide out in. Usually, if it's a family where you have mom, dad, and a few little ones, they all kind of hibernate together. Families that hibernate together stay together. And then they will hibernate for, as I said, about 6 months at a time. And that means they're not consuming any food during that time. They're not getting out and leaving their nests at that point in time. They are exclusively using the fat that they've stored up around their body to survive. And the really fascinating thing is that these are primates who not only cannot eat for that length of time, they don't develop diabetes from eating huge amounts of sugar and then eating nothing for large amounts of time. They only lose the fat that they've stored up, no atrophy of their muscles, no loss of muscle mass, anything like that. They don't develop bed sores. So everything about them is really honed in and specialized on this extremely amazing skill.
It is remarkable that dwarf lemurs can do this because they are primates. Like the piece that I think is crazy about them being able to do this is how big their brains are compared to their bodies. Like that's one of the things that makes a primate is like big brain on a body that is relatively small compared to many other animals. And being able to slow down so much of their body and keep everything going, including their brains. They wake up, they have a sense of who their family is. They have a sense of who they are. Like there's not like neurons getting lost in the process is itself a superpower that comes out of this torpor process that is so ripe for all kinds of research questions.
As fellow primates, that really piques our interest because wouldn't it be amazing if we had much better alternatives to things like medically induced comas or looking at things like space travel in the future?
It sounds kind of sci-fi, but maybe NASA should be paying a little more attention to these dwarf lemurs.
We have a resident research scientist position at the Duke Lemur Center, and right now that's Dr. Anna Bright, who has spent a lot of time studying tropical mammals. And when she joined us, she had a lot of expertise on other tropical mammals and brought a fresh perspective on the dwarf lemurs because she had not previously studied primates. Just in early November, we had a crew of our fat-tailed dwarf lemurs living at the Duke Lemur Center move into an area that we call our torpornaculum, also sometimes dubbed our hibernaculum. And they're doing some science all winter long here for us, although I will note that their hibernation season will be reversed in Madagascar since it's in the opposite hemisphere. But here, we are in their hibernation season, and so we've got a whole crew of little squirrel-sized lemurs doing some science all winter long. To be totally clear, whether you're living in the hibernaculum or in regular dwarf lemur housing during this hibernation season, you will be doing some form of torpor. Your body's naturally going to do it. Remember, these are obligate hibernators. They are obligated by their evolution and their physiology to need to hibernate every single year. In fact, they enter their first hibernation before they've even hit full sexual maturity, before they've got all of their adult teeth. It is a necessary part of being a dwarf lemur. It's just the finer details of how you are cared for during that hibernation and whether or not we feel comfortable experimenting with the temperatures you're experiencing or the humidity you're experiencing based on your baseline overall health. There's also protocols for whether or not they can continue to be in the study. So we check weights regularly, we check other factors. And if they drop below certain parameters, then they might be pulled from the study and just returned to typical housing and back into the care of our husbandry team. So we're very, very careful to make sure that all the animals are thriving when they're in the study and we don't have any risks to their health at all because of participating. And these animals don't live in this room year round. It's a big thing when they move for the hibernation season. So they just moved in early November this year, and it is very careful, the selection process. So first, the research team, Dr. Anna Bright heads this up. They look at like which animals could make sense in the study and who would be a good control living in our typical housing for the dwarf lemurs and going through the season without these other factors going on with the temperature, humidity, other things that Anna is looking at. And then all the animals that have been identified as a great possible animal for the study, undergo review by the animal care team, looking at, you know, what they know of the animal's welfare and their needs, and then also go through a veterinary exam. And it's pretty extensive to make sure that they are in the proper condition, looking at their weight, looking at other factors going on with them. And actually, sometimes animals get pulled from the study. This year, we actually had an animal named Kookaburra who was slated to go into the study, but after some medical review, we didn't feel comfortable including Kookaburra in the study, didn't feel that Kookaburra was fit for joining the study. And so Kookaburra was out, and Auklet is now in the study group.
So what kinds of information is Anna gathering about these animals?
So one of the really cool things that Anna has been looking at and gathering over her time in the study is looking at the different phases of hibernation. So we've talked about that word and thrown it around a lot, but let's break it down into what it actually means. So hibernation is actually broken up into a series of periods called torpor and then periods called arousal periods. But put a pin in that arousal word because it means something different than what we normally think of it meaning. It has nothing to do with getting up and moving around. So when you're a dwarf lemur, just moving around normally in the wet season, eating to your heart's content, you're going to have a heart rate of over 200 beats per minute. If you are a dwarf lemur in your torpor state, your heart rate goes down to maybe 5 to 10 beats total per minute. You're going to go down to breathing maybe once every 5 minutes, and you're going to have almost no activity in your brain waves. Like everything is so shut down that we're actually shut down past the point of being able to sleep. And so if your metabolism is that shut down, lots of different processes aren't really possible, like eating and consuming food and digesting it. But sleep is a really important one. We can go without eating, especially in this hibernation state, but hibernation isn't so much of a superpower that you don't need to sleep. That's an essential thing. We will die if we can't sleep. And so these dwarf lemurs go through this super intense metabolic depression, and it can be for a day or a few weeks at a time. But every so often, they do have to enter this period of arousal. Arousal means being able to do things like sleep. So they're not getting up and moving around, it's just that their metabolism kicks up just enough to raise their body temperature, which has just been whatever the ambient temperature is around them. When they enter that state of arousal, they got to warm their body up enough. Your body has to be warm enough to do things like sleep. And then for about 24 hours, they do those essential functions in their brain, like sleep, and then they go right back down into that metabolic depression, and they kind of cycle through this the entire time.
So we want to extract all of this data, and we're not doing it in an invasive way. But what does it actually look like? We have these rooms where we're varying temperature or not varying temperature, but then in those rooms, we have lemurs. Are they just like laying on shelves?
So great question. The rooms they're in look remarkably like walk-in coolers when you first glance at them from the outside. But once you walk into one of them, you would see towers set up along the sides of the room. And basically, these towers are set up as places that could be home to, say, a single dwarf lemur. A single dwarf lemur might live in a tower that has a bottom and a top enclosure, so they have enough room if they want to get up and move around. Or we can connect them on either side. So if we have a family and they all want to be together, we can have more space for them to all go through the hibernation season together. So they're in these tower enclosures, but those aren't empty. Obviously, they need things. So they'll have some branching in them, the things we would normally put in for the lemurs if they were to opt to move around, although they don't do much moving when they're in their hibernaculum. We also have nest boxes for them, and these are made out of wood. There's a small hole for them to get in and out to make sure that they can stay nice and cozy. They can get nesting material so they can kind of pull things in, make themselves cozy. And then we have an insert that goes inside the nest box because they do still need to do basic functions like poop, and we don't want it to get too messy in there. Some people ask us, well, why don't you don't offer them any food during this time period, which seems very counterintuitive. But actually what we found is if food is offered too frequently to them, the energy that it takes to rouse their body enough to consume the food and digest it, right? That's a huge part of eating. A huge amount of your energy goes towards eating. It's really energetically expensive to digest food. And so they actually can lose weight too rapidly if you offer them food too frequently during that hibernation season. And so it's a very delicate balance that we've had to learn. And of course, we have to adjust it for certain lemurs, especially as they age into ages we wouldn't necessarily see in the wild. And so those lemurs would not be part of the hibernation study, so we can be a little more flexible with their needs. And actually, while they're living in the hibernaculum, the care of those lemurs actually transfers over to the research team and Dr. Anna Bright. And so there's a big collaboration with our husbandry team, who specialize in animal care, where they go over all of these protocols, everything that is needed. If there's ever any questions, they kind of can collaborate. But they really are like doing science, part of that crew over there. And luckily, they're in a building right next to our veterinary department, too, just in case there's ever any concerns.
So then, when these animals emerge from their season of sleep, what do their tails look like?
Yes, they have skinny tails, and it's remarkable. They've used all that fat up, only the fat, no other loss of muscle, anything else, no bed sores, anything like that. But the funniest thing to me is how quickly they do it. Like they are stumbling around and up and about within like an hour of starting to kind of rouse, and within a few hours, they're up and eating. One of the things that Anna's really interested in is that it's not necessarily always the case that they wait the 7 to 10 days to do this torpor, particularly because we're talking about an animal that can live in an area that has very tropical temperatures, depending on which dwarf lemur species. And so we have two different rooms set up in our hibernaculum space, and we can control the temperature, the humidity, the light cycle at every time of day. We have one room set up where we have temperatures going up nice and high during the day, and then going back down, and then going up and going back down. And then we have another room set up where you have a pretty constant chilly temperature set up, much more what you would expect in like a colder region or maybe a more elevated region where you have cooler temperatures. And what her theory is, and it seems like we've got some data to support this, is that when the body temperature is naturally tracking up, if it's getting up to 90 degrees, the body's getting up to above 90 degrees, it's much easier to slip into that maintenance phase of arousal where you're doing a little bit of sleep. If you are a dwarf lemur who's at that more constant chilly temperature, it's going to be really metabolically expensive to heat your body up enough to go to sleep, meaning you got to use a lot of that energy store, a lot of that fat store, and it's got to last you. And so you're going to wait and only do that 7 to 10 days. But if you're already getting warm thanks to the environment around you, your body's naturally going to perceive that and be like, oh, now's a good time to sleep real quick and then go back down. So, really fascinating kind of minute details in what's going on in these animals. And that's just one example. There are so many other cool things we can learn. Now, let's do some fun facts.
So, Megan, what are your fun facts for this episode?
Lemurs are often represented in popular media because they're adorable. And one such famous piece of media is the Island of the Lemurs IMAX film. Raven, the resident fat-tailed dwarf lemur at the Lemur Center, is actually the star of the lemur crossing scene in that IMAX film. So they set up, film crew came in and set up so that they could film Raven kind of moving across a branch as the lemur kind of later edited in post to look like she is traveling across to the Mozambique Channel to get to Madagascar. But a fun behind the scenes fact that I learned about this story from people who were there at the time that it was filmed is that, of course, it's a film. They need lighting, they need bright lights. And she is nocturnal. And so she was happy hanging out in her little tube. She was doing just fine. And then they would ask her to come out. And as soon as she saw the bright lights, she was like, oh no, it's bedtime. I gotta go to bed. And so they had a really hard time getting any footage where she wasn't just a really sleepy lemur just going back to bed. The light wasn't necessarily hurting her eyes or anything. It was more that she was like, oh, it's daytime. I'm sleepy. I should go to bed now.
I understand that feeling deeply.
Yeah, you just walk out the door and you're like, oh, actually, it's too bright. I'm gonna call it. I'm gonna go back. Matt, what have you learned?
There is definitely an idea that this trait, this ability to kind of like go into deep torpor, is something that we see in lots of mammals. Lemurs sit very like close to the fork of like the rest of primate biology. And then dwarf lemurs and mouse lemurs, so the small lemurs, all branch off of the rest of lemurs pretty early. Like they've been on their own for a while. So there's this idea that maybe dwarf lemurs and mouse lemurs represent kind of ancestral lemur shape. And then ancestral lemur shape represents ancestral primate shape. And there's this idea that you kind of like triangulate back. And maybe this explains how lemurs got to Madagascar, that a sleepy lemur stuck in a tree is able to go into torpor and drift across the Mozambique Channel from Africa to Madagascar. And that's how this group of animals was able to make this journey across a big body of water. But one of the things that makes it kind of tough to figure out if that's like how lemurs were able to make it across a giant ocean is other groups of mammals have also crossed big chunks of ocean. And as far as we know, those animals don't go into hibernation, don't have torpor. There's also a group of monkeys that evolve in Africa and go across the Atlantic Ocean and colonize South America. So Platyrrhine monkeys, the New World monkeys that live in South America and then have kind of made their way up through Central America, things like howler monkeys and capuchin monkeys and marmosets, those animals all come from an ancestor or ancestors that crossed the Atlantic Ocean. And there is no evidence in monkeys and apes of being able to go into this kind of like complete metabolic shutdown. And so it may have been something that helped lemurs get across the water. And it could be evidence of maybe there was torpor way back as like an ancestral state for lemurs. But because we have monkeys crossing the Atlantic Ocean, which was an even further distance than the Mozambique Channel to Madagascar, it suggests it wasn't necessary to make that cross. So it leaves it a little open to debate. And the only way to really get at that is to find lemur fossils from closer to the time when lemurs were making the cross from Africa to Madagascar, and then when they were diversifying in Madagascar. And we are still looking for those. So,
So, it sounds like we could maybe have a few spin-off episodes after this one, right? Because I've mentioned Dr. Anna Bright. She's super fascinating. Would love to talk to her a little bit more. And then you kind of laid a little teaser there about us still searching for more fossils and more adaptations. Might that maybe turn into a future conversation?
there's always more to talk about when it comes to what's going on at the Duke Lemur Center.
Thank you for tuning in for this episode of iiPod.
This podcast is brought to you ad-free by the Duke Lemur Center.
If you'd like to learn more about the Duke Lemur Center's work in research, education, and conservation, or even schedule a visit to see the lemurs
or the fossils
in Durham, North Carolina, go to lemur.duke.edu.
All that we do here at the Lemur Center is only possible with donor support. If you'd like to support us, you can visit lemur.duke.edu/donate. And with that, thanks for Matt
and Megan
and all the primates at the Duke Lemur Center.